Chapter 27. Maggie gritted her teeth the entire way to the Portuguese lady's house. Kate drove like an old woman. She tapped her foot on the brake any time another car got near. She didn't pass anyone. She engaged her signals 200 feet from the turn. She kept both hands on the wheel in the 10-2 position. Maggie knew an act when she saw one. She had pulled over her share of Kate Murphy's. Women like that didn't think the rules applied to them. They ignored stop signs. They pushed the speed limit. They drove with a convertible top down and silk scarves wrapped around their heads to keep their hair from getting messed up. "Gosh, officer, was I really going that fast?" The cruiser came to a slow stop in front of the Portuguese lady's house. The place looked much the same as it had the day before. The only difference was the sheer curtain blowing out of the broken window on the second floor. No one had bothered to board it up yet. Kate got out of the car first. She was first up the sidewalk, first on the porch. Maggie was fine with letting her take the lead. Let someone else be in charge for a change. Knowing Kate's luck, she would open the door and Jimmy would be standing there. He'd hold out his hands and give her a confession. Calvick would promote Kate on the spot. She'd be the only female detective on the force. At the ceremony, she would take a bow and a rainbow would come out of her ass. Kate knocked on the door like she was the Avon lady. Maggie said, "You need to knock harder."
"I was under the impression that you wanted me to handle this."
Maggie said nothing. Every time she thought her hostility was gone, Kate would open her mouth, and she would want to punch her all over again. Kate knocked. This time, like she was a kid selling magazine subscriptions. Maggie asked, "Where'd you learn Portuguese? You live in Europe or something?" She had probably honeymooned there with her dead husband, who looked like Robert Redford.
"Pardon?"
Kate looked confused. Then she smiled that million-watt smile.
"She wasn't speaking Portuguese. It's Yiddish. I picked up some from my grandmother. Father said she's Eastern European. A Shanda una Chirpa. It was quite a scandal when they married."
Maggie was saved asking what the hell she was talking about by the door opening. There were no bolts and a sliding chain this time. The Portuguese lady stood back from the doorway. She held a candle in her hand. The house was dark, no lights were on. She was wearing the same black outfit as the day before, but the sleeve was torn at the shoulder. Her salt and pepper hair hung down to her waist. Maggie didn't know why. She hadn't bothered to wash it. Kate didn't speak. She touched the little rectangular box on the door jamb before walking into the house. Maggie felt her training rear its head. The rooms were filled with shadows. All the drapes were closed. Even the mirror over the fireplace was covered with a black sheet. She wanted to turn on a light. There was no telling who else was in the house. The woman walked toward the kitchen. The candle flickered from the breeze. Her feet padded softly against the floor. She wasn't wearing shoes. Kate started to follow. Maggie grabbed her sleeve.
"Shh,"
Kate warned. Maggie tried to catch her sleeve again, but Kate was already walking down the hallway. All Maggie could do was follow. This was what she got for letting Kate take the lead. An interview where nobody was allowed to talk. At least the kitchen wasn't as dark as the rest of the house. There were no curtains on the windows. Sunlight streamed into the room. Food of all kinds was laid out on the countertop. Maggie didn't recognize half of what she saw. The Portuguese lady put the candle on the windowsill over the sink. She nodded toward the kitchen table. Kate sat down, so Maggie did too. The woman kept her back to them as she fixed two plates. Maggie let out a long sigh to let everybody know she was not happy. None of this was getting them any closer to finding Jimmy.
She'd known this was a stupid idea from the start. The old woman finished loading the plates. She turned around. The sunlight bathed her face. A surprised, "Oh," came out of Maggie's mouth. Stubble covered the woman's face. No wonder she sounded like Ricardo Montalban. The Portuguese lady was a man. He asked, "May I offer you some iced tea?" "Yes, thank you." Kate didn't seem surprised by any of this. She took the plates. She set them on the table. She gave Maggie a look of warning, similar to the one a mother would give a misbehaving child. "I don't think we exchanged names yesterday. I'm Officer Murphy. This is Officer Lawson."
"Eduardo Rosa."
He rested his hands on his hips as he studied Kate.
"Murphy. I'm assuming you married a Shagetz."
"I did."
"Smart girl. Jewish men never shut up."
Kate laughed very deeply at what was obviously an inside joke. Eduardo went to the icebox. He pulled out a pitcher of iced tea. He took a tray from the freezer. He found two glasses in the cabinet. Maggie watched, transfixed. How had she not seen this yesterday? The high collar hid an Adam's apple. The long sleeves covered hairy arms. The floor-length skirt obscured big feet. The biggest giveaway should have been his hands. They were enormous. Maggie realized, "You're the tranny pimp."
"Feh."
He popped the ice out of the tray.
"Pimps are all Schwartzes."
Kate snorted into her hand.
"My late husband, Gerald."
Eduardo set the two glasses of iced tea on the table.
"He was in charge of the business."
He pointed to the chair Maggie was sitting in.
"Died right there 3 months ago. Heart attack. We worked together 20 years.
Kate asked, "Sheik was your son?"
"His name was Lionel. He lived in Detroit with his mother, Lydia. I always liked the dark ones."
There were two more chairs at the table, but Eduardo steadied his hand on the counter and sat down on the floor. "Lionel was pimping up in Detroit, but he got into trouble. He was always in trouble. Allah Hashalom." Eduardo paused a moment before continuing. "Lydia asked if I could help.
With Gerald gone, we thought he could take over the business down here."
Maggie rested her chin in her hand so her jaw wouldn't hit the floor. "Did you give them your real name for the witness statement yesterday? That's sworn testimony."
"I gave them Gerald's name. Nobody asked me to put my hand on the Bible."
Eduardo looked up at Kate.
"I know you're here for information. Can you get my boy released to me?"
Kate seemed surprised. "You haven't had the funeral?"
"The coroner won't release the body. We have all the paperwork. Lydia's down there now. They say it will be another week."
Finally, Maggie could contribute something. "They have to do an autopsy. It's an important part of the investigation. If they can track the bullet back to the gun that was used, then they might find the killer. And all of it has to be presented at trial."
"I don't want my son's body mutilated any more than it already is."
Eduardo's voice was firm.
"I need to do right by him."
Maggie said,
"I'm sorry, but it's the law. Don't you want us to catch the man who killed your son?"
"Young lady, I know that Lionel was in a very dangerous line of business. Would I be happy if you caught his murderer?"
"Of course. But you must understand that I need his body released so that his mother and I can bury him."
Kate asked, "Have you talked to your rabbi?" He indicated his dress.
"Do I look reformed to you?"
"Maggie, do you know someone?"
"At the coroner's office?" Maggie thought she knew a girl from night class who was a secretary. I can make some calls, but I can't promise anything.
Eduardo clasped his hands together in his lap. He looked down at the floor. Maggie wondered if he was praying, but she wasn't sure how Jews prayed, or if they prayed at all. He finally looked up.
If you promise to do whatever you can, then I'll tell you what you came here for.
All right. Kate agreed, as if this was exactly what she had planned.
Eduardo began. The girl who was there the night the policeman was shot. Her name is Delilah. I have no idea if that's her real name. Maybe she likes Tom Jones, who doesn't? I don't know her last name either. She was probably 15 when Gerald found her sucking cock inside the porn theater on Ponce.
Kate sat back in her chair.
He worked her hard. That was his reputation. Puritan work ethic.
He gave a one-shouldered shrug.
Delilah didn't last long, and she was a lot more trouble than she was worth. Gerald sold her off at a loss just to get rid of her. When Lionel came to town, he had to start from scratch. I loved my boy, but he was an Armläufer. Everything had to be handed to him. I said I might know a girl desperate to do anything that was needed. He found her working the Amtrak station on Peachtree.
In Buckhead? Kate's voice went up. She was back to form. Maggie took over. Is Delilah still working Whitehall?
I have no idea where she's working. She came here the night of the shooting. Lionel smacked her around. She was supposed to work all night. She gave him the police transmitter. Lionel called me in to look at it. I knew immediately what we had.
Maggie said, a bargaining chip.
We were going to wait until the reward got higher, $5,000.
He huffed with disgust.
When they caught the last guy, the reward was up to 20.
Kate crossed her arms. All of her pleasantness had drained away. Maggie asked,
what did Delilah see?
I assume you weren't going to let her walk into the police station, tell her story, and collect the money.
Eduardo asked, you'll make the call? You promise?
I said I would.
I'm trusting you.
Maggie said, you realize that the person who killed Lionel is probably the same man who killed that cop? He put his hand to his chest. His voice wavered.
I understand that. But you must understand that I want my son's body buried in the ground where it belongs.
Maggie felt his despair as easily as she felt her own.
I promise you that I will do everything I can to get him released.
Eduardo nodded.
The killer was white, not like the black man in the police sketch.
Maggie felt her heart seize.
Tall, muscular, broad shoulders. He was wearing black pants, a red shirt, and had black gloves on his hands. She didn't notice the shoes.
Maggie bit her lip to keep it from trembling. Jimmy wore black gloves.
Eduardo continued. He had dark hair cut short. His mustache was trimmed, long sideburns. Delilah said he looked like a square except for his sideburns.
Maggie forced her voice to remain steady.
That's pretty specific. How close was she? She was at the end of the alley. She saw everything. The man came around the corner. He had a midnight special in his hand, Raven MP25.
The brand of gun had not been released to the public.
Was she sure about that? An MP25? Delilah knows her weapons. Her father knocked over his share of liquor stores.
She saw all of that. Maggie forced some incredulity into her voice. She was close enough to make out the gun, and the shooter's face, and what he was wearing, and she was still alive when it was over.
If I know Delilah, she was under a cardboard box shooting H.
she was stoned?
Maggie felt a glimmer of hope.
That's not what I'd call a reliable eyewitness.
She's reliable when there's a knife in her throat.
Eduardo reached up to the counter. With much groaning and popping, he managed to pull himself up from the floor.
I'm telling you what we got out of her. I let Anthony handle it. Delilah told him everything she saw. On that, you can trust me.
Maggie felt sweat rolling down her back. The kitchen was too hot. She was going to throw up if she didn't get out of here soon. Kate asked, "What were the two cops doing when the shooter came around the corner?" Eduardo turned back to the sink.
She didn't say. And I've told you ladies everything I know. May Hashem strike you down if you fail to carry out your part of the bargain.
We will, Kate said. I promise. Maggie stood up. She had to get out of this house. I'm sorry for your loss. Kate said, May heaven comfort you. Maggie forced herself not to run up the hallway. Her throat was closing up. She pulled at her collar. Her fingers brushed the bruises on her neck. She wrenched open the door and took great gulps of air into her lungs. Kate put her hand on Maggie's shoulder. You all right? Maggie shrugged her off as she walked down the stairs. She buttoned her collar. She had told Kate not to trust anybody. Why were they trusting Eduardo? He could be lying about the description. He could be lying about the girl who was a witness. The girl could be lying to everybody. But then, how did she get Jimmy's transmitter? Kate said, Well, I guess that was interesting, but I'm not sure that it was helpful. Maggie wiped the sweat off the back of her neck. Her stomach was churning. She felt strung out and exhausted. Kate said, We were already considering the fact that the shooter might be white. And that description, tall, athletic, mustache, long sideburns, who does that sound like? Maggie tasted bile in her mouth. Every cop on the police force, that's who. Including Jimmy and your Uncle Terry. And all of them wear black driving gloves. Too many Steve McQueen movies, methinks. She handed Maggie the keys to the cruiser. It's probably best if you drive to Dabbler's. I've never been to that part of town. She opened the car door. I'll give Gail credit for this. She was right about those people. I can't believe the way Eduardo talked about that poor girl. I know she's a prostitute, but still, you'd think he was discussing a side of beef. She paused for a second. He? She? Gosh, which is it? Maggie walked around the car. She got in behind the wheel. She tried to put the key in the ignition, but the ring slipped from her fingers. She blindly reached down to try to find them. Kate chattered on. She, I guess. We ought to reward the effort. That's what I would prefer in his shoes. Her shoes. I couldn't believe it when she opened the door and I saw that beard. Eduardo Rosa. That explains the voice. Yesterday, I kept expecting her to talk about soft Corinthian leather. Kate laughed to herself. I guess we should run her name just to be sure nothing else surprises us. My gosh, I hate to sound arrogant, but one just expects more from a Jew. God damn it. Maggie muttered. She could feel the keys, but her fingers couldn't grip them. I know, I shouldn't be unkind. She's sitting Shiva. It's actually a beautiful ritual. There are all kinds of rules. You're not supposed to shave or use makeup. She tore her clothes. That's called Kriya, to signify grief and anger over the death. She was sitting on the floor because you're supposed to keep low to the ground, though you're supposed to bury the body within 24 hours. That's why she's so upset. The mourning should go on for 7 days. Shiva means seven. Got him. Maggie's cheek bumped against the steering wheel. She winced from the pain. The bruise had its own heartbeat. Kate brought her rambling to an end.
Maggie, I'm running out of pointless things to say, so I'd really appreciate it if you would give me some kind of response.
Maggie took the easy route. I'll call in about Eduardo Rosa. See if he has a sheet.
Kate studied Maggie. All morning I felt like there's something important that you're not telling me.
Gosh, really?
Maggie mimicked.
Like that I'm Jewish, or that I'm a widow, or that my father is the richest gardener in the history of the world?
Yes, all of those are excellent examples of what I'm talking about.
Maggie jammed the key into the ignition. She started the car.
Does your throat hurt?
Only when I have to answer stupid questions.
Chapter 28. Kate stared at the transmitter in her lap. Every other call to dispatch was about a possible sighting of Jimmy's car or a new lead on the shooter. She had been right about today being a criminal's holiday. Wanda Clack called in a cleared chicken bone, and one of the colored girls reported finding a previously reported stolen CB radio. But those were the only crimes that were being solved today. She leaned her head against her hand. Kate was sitting in the cruiser outside of Dabbler's while Maggie used the payphone on the side of the building. She had no idea what part of town they were in, let alone if they were still inside the city limits. To say the bar was nondescript was an understatement. Kate supposed that was its own protection. You didn't come here unless you knew what it was for. And if you didn't know what it was for, you probably never noticed it. The brick facade was painted black. The narrow windows were tinted to block out the daylight. There were no neon liquor signs that she could see from the street. There wasn't even a sign on the door. What gave the place away was the clientele. One after another, well-dressed men in suits got out of their expensive cars and walked through the swinging door. Their hair touched their collars. Their sideburns hugged square jaws. They all had mustaches, and they all, to a one, looked like the gay men with which Kate was more familiar. That there was a police cruiser parked outside the establishment seemed to have little impact on traffic. Within 10 minutes of Maggie getting out of the car, the parking lot was full. Cars surrounded Kate on all sides. Some of the men even smiled at her as they walked toward the building. So, a police officer wasn't an unusual visitor at Dabbler's. Kate wasn't surprised. You didn't wind up in this part of town by accident. You had to know exactly where you were going. They could assume Don Wesley had visited the establishment at least once. Had Jimmy, too? Was he inside the building right now nursing his wounds? Because he had to be wounded, and not just from the pieces of skull embedded in his leg or the bullet that ripped through his arm. No matter how cavalier he had acted at the house yesterday morning, Kate could not accept that Jimmy Lawson did not feel something for his lost lover. Or his sister. Maggie had killed a man yesterday. Did Jimmy know that someone had also tried to choke her? The bruises were starker now. Kate could make out the finger marks where a hand had wrapped around Maggie's neck. She assumed that Terry was the attacker. Jimmy could be a self-righteous prick, but she could not imagine him strangling his sister. Then again, Kate could not imagine Maggie losing her shit. But that was exactly what had happened with Lewis Conroy. Kate couldn't very well say she'd never seen anything like it. Gail had attacked that prostitute. She'd broken the woman's leg, then tortured her. Maggie had not tortured Conroy in the same sadistic manner, but there were some eerie similarities. Was this what Kate had to look forward to? Was there a fourth person lurking in her psyche who was going to be a violent sadist? As with everything else that had to do with this impossible job, the situation wasn't completely black and white. Or maybe, in the case of Lewis Conroy, it was. That he was a white man and his victim was a young black girl meant a great deal. There was no question of his guilt. Conroy had just as much as admitted to it.
He had shown no remorse, even when he was on the ground straining for air. He'd never apologized. Actually, he'd sounded arrogant, like a man arguing with a waiter over a miscalculated bar tab. If you were the sort of man like Conroy, you knew that was an argument you were always going to win. No wonder they all hated people from Kate's side of town. She was beginning to hate them herself. The sense of entitlement, the attitude. Was that what had set Maggie against her? She'd been enraged after they left Conroy. Kate had assumed she just needed some time to collect herself. Instead, Maggie had taken that time to redirect her vehemence toward Kate. The radio hummed with another possible shooter sighting. Kate turned down the volume. She studied the white plastic brick in her lap. If she lived to be a million years old, she would never forget what this thing looked like. Gale had used it as a weapon. Sir Sheik had used it as a bargaining chip. Jimmy had left it at the scene of Dawn's murder. Kate could guess why Jimmy had left the transmitter in the alley. You couldn't sit with one of these clipped to your belt, let alone pull down your pants with one on. He must have put the brick beside his leg the same as everyone did. Unplugging the jack ensured no accidental transmissions were sent out. And when Dawn was shot, the last thing Jimmy would have been worried about was his radio. Maggie had finished her phone calls. She was walking across the parking lot. She weaved between the cars. Her head was down. Her spiral notebook was in one hand. She got into the car. She rested her arm on the door. She stared at the building and did not say a word. Kate stared at the building, too. She had tried questions. She had tried pointless babbling. Now she was going to try silence. Maggie seemed content to let it drag out. She watched the men going into the building. The lot was full, though it was only 11 in the morning. Overflow parking lined the street. She finally spoke. "My contact at the coroner's office is going to see what she can do. She's just a secretary. I don't know if they'll listen to her." Kate bit her lip so that she wouldn't answer. "I asked for Eduardo Rosa's rap sheet. Rick said he can leave it at the hospital for us. I thought we could check on Gale." Kate couldn't help herself. She nodded. Maggie hissed out a stream of air between her teeth. "This is a gay bar, isn't it?" Kate hesitated. "Yes." Maggie pulled the door handle. "Ready?" Kate got out of the car. She clipped the transmitter on her belt. She put Jimmy's smelly hat on her head. Maggie resumed her silence as she walked between the cars. Her hat was low on her head. She kept her hands down at her sides. Her shoulders were stooped. Kate wondered how little pressure it would take to knock her to the ground. She hoped she didn't find out. Everyone inside the bar looked up when they entered. There were some curious mumbles, but for the most part, none of the men seemed worried that two female cops had walked through the door. And none of them were Jimmy Lawson. Maggie headed toward the bar. Yet again, Kate followed. The inside of the building was just as dark as it looked from the outside. Men sat close to each other at the tables. They were jammed shoulder to shoulder into the small booths. Linda Ronstadt played softly through the speakers. The song choice seemed appropriate for the crowd. "When Will I Be Loved?" Kate didn't know what she had been expecting. Lecherous glances, filthy back rooms. For the most part, the men looked like couples who met for a drink before lunch. Hands were being held. Arms were draped over the backs of chairs. Glances were stolen across the room. The atmosphere was loose and casual. Barring the fact that everyone was of the same sex, the place felt like every club Kate had ever visited. Chivalry was not lost at Dabblers. Two men gave up their places at the bar. Maggie didn't acknowledge the gesture. She sat down. She put her hat in front of her.
She looked like she wanted a drink, but Kate was still surprised when she ordered a bourbon neat. She asked Kate, "You want one?"
"Sure."
Kate put her hat on the bar. Maggie stared at the mirror behind the rows of liquor. Her eyes slid back and forth across the room as she checked each face, noted each gesture. "On the house." The bartender put two glasses in front of them. He was gorgeous, probably no more than 18, and sporting the same long sideburns and thick mustache as the rest of them. "Is there something I can help you gals with?" Maggie reached into her breast pocket. She pulled out a photograph. "Have you seen this man?" He smiled. His teeth were straight and beautiful. "Yeah, that's Jim. Is he a friend of yours?" Maggie put the photo face down on the bar. "When's the last time you saw him?" The bartender narrowed his eyes. "Is he in trouble?" "It depends on when you saw him last." "A couple of nights ago?" He gave it some more thought. "Must have been for Don's memorial service. That was Monday night, right?" Maggie picked up the glass. She finished the bourbon in one swallow. Kate asked, "You haven't seen Jimmy since then?"
"Nope. He doesn't usually come during the day."
"He's a regular?"
"Sure. Everybody loves Jim."
The bartender nodded at a customer, indicating he'd be a minute.
"Is there anything else?"
Maggie asked, "Have you seen anyone suspicious hanging around here?"
"Other than two Pepper Andersons?" he told Kate. "I love your hair, doll. The color is dazzling."
"Thank you." Kate stroked back her hair. She couldn't help herself. "There hasn't been anyone here lately who seems out of place. Someone who doesn't blend in."
"Honey, every man in this place blends in as soon as he walks through that door. That's kind of the point."
He refilled Maggie's glass.
"Sorry, I couldn't."
He stopped.
"You know what? There was a guy here yesterday who kind of freaked me."
Maggie asked, "What did he look like?"
"Me," he laughed, "except older."
Kate knew this wasn't much help. When you were 18, 30 was ancient. "Did he say anything?"
"Not really. He was one of those strong, silent types. Good tipper. Drank Southern Comfort. He kept watching the door every time it opened. I got the feeling he was either waiting for somebody or looking for somebody. Of course, that's pretty much what everybody's doing when they're in here."
"Was he a cop?"
"He wasn't wearing a uniform. He kind of looked like a cop or a soldier. We get a lot of vets in here. I think most of them aren't even gay. They just got used to being around men over there. They want to feel like they're a part of a unit again. Weird, huh?"
Kate nodded like she understood. He topped off Maggie's drink again.
"Listen, cutie, you're both welcome to sit here and drink all you want, but don't go asking the customers questions. You won't get anything more than what I've told you, and you'd be surprised how many cups higher up the food chain darken our doors. You picking up what I'm putting down?"
"Yes." Kate had given up on jive talk after yesterday's debacle. "Thank you." He winked at her before walking away. Maggie took another drink. Kate tried her bourbon and nearly gagged. He certainly hadn't given them top shelf.
"Let's go."
Maggie grabbed her hat. She walked toward the door. Kate decided to take her time. She picked up the photograph on the bar. It was a good picture of Jimmy. He was leaning against a car. His shirt was tight across his muscular chest. His chin was tilted up confidently. He was smiling. And Kate hoped that Maggie had taken the picture, that the grin captured by the camera was meant for his sister. She tucked her hat under her arm as she made her way through the crowded room. She didn't have to push her way out. Men politely stepped aside. They nodded, deferentially. Someone even opened the door for her. She scanned the parking lot for Maggie. She wasn't in the cruiser. She wasn't walking between cars. Kate turned. The payphones were empty. She was about to go back into the bar when she heard heaving.
Maggie was on the side of the building. She was on the ground, on all fours, divulging the contents of her stomach. Kate's first instinct was to go to her, to put her hand to her back, to help keep her hair out of the way. But she was the second Kate now, or maybe the fourth. So she just stood there, waiting for the nausea to pass. The passing took longer than anticipated. Kate's feet started to hurt. She sat down on the curb. She stared out at the debris-strewn, vacant lot next door. Someone had abandoned a shopping cart filled with wet pieces of cardboard. Condoms, needles, tinfoil, spoons. The usual detritus that she'd come to accept riddled every part of the city but her own. Finally, Maggie groaned out what little liquid was left in her stomach. She wiped her mouth with her hand. Kate looked down at her hat. Jimmy's name was written inside the brim. She had no idea where her own hat was. She'd found her shoes in the back of Gail's car, but the hat was missing. Maggie sat back on her knees. She was panting. Kate said, "I meant to put a sachet in this hat last night. I keep some in my lingerie drawer. They smell like roses." Maggie looked out at the lot. Kate hooked the hat on her knee. She smoothed the legs of her pants. "My father's a psychiatrist."
"God damn it," Maggie muttered. "That makes so much sense."
Kate smiled because it probably did.
"He's paying for my apartment. There was no insurance policy. I never claimed my husband's benefits because I thought if I did, then it would mean he's really dead."
Maggie turned to look at her. "I spent last night with a married man. He wants me to come back tonight, but I don't know if I will. Should I? Probably not."
"Why are you telling me this?"
"I don't know," Kate admitted. "You seemed so angry at me before. I thought it was because you knew I was lying. Now I'm not so sure."
"Is this some sort of deal? Show me yours and I'll show you mine?"
Kate shrugged. She didn't know what it was.
"Jimmy's gay."
Maggie's tone had a finality to it. "He wasn't lying about that. I've been fighting it all night, but I don't think he was lying about anything." Kate knew better than to ask for clarification.
"On the street, somebody tells you one lie, you just block out everything else. They can't be trusted."
Maggie cleared her throat several times. She looked like she wanted to spit.
"So, if he's telling the truth about something so horrible."
Her voice trailed off. She leaned over and spit on the ground.
"I'm sorry."
Kate didn't know why spitting felt less ladylike than throwing up, but it did. "Do you want me to go back into the bar and get you a glass of water?"
"All those men in there."
She started shaking her head. "They looked so normal."
"They are normal."
Maggie looked back at her again.
"You never thought about what your brother did with women? Why would you think about what he might be doing with men?"
"It's all so easy for you. You just decide that this is the way things are and you go on like it doesn't matter."
"I can't sit around feeling sorry for myself. I tried that for 2 years and it gained me nothing."
"Kate, you cry all the time." She laughed because she didn't think of it as crying. The tears from the last few days were nothing like the one she'd cried for Patrick.
"You have to get things out. You can't keep them bottled in all the time."
"That's easy to say when you have choices."
"You have a choice."
Kate handed her the photo of Jimmy.
"You can choose to love your brother no matter what."
Maggie cupped the photo in her hand. She stared at the image until a tear splashed onto Jimmy's face.
"All night, I didn't believe him. I know my brother. At least, I thought I knew him.
Kate maintained her silent strategy. Maggie crumpled the photo. She stuck it in her pants pocket.
Jimmy confessed to being the shooter. He killed all those men.
Kate felt the words travel around her brain. They were like marbles in a wooden labyrinth puzzle rolling around, looking for the right path. Maggie said, "Mark Porter, Greg Keane, Alex Ballard, Leonard Johnson, Don Wesley. Jimmy killed them all." Finally, Kate could speak.
"That's not possible."
He wrote it down. Maggie pulled her notebook out of her pocket. "His confession. I copied it."
"Where's the original?"
"It doesn't matter." Kate took the notebook.
"Of course it matters. What happened to the original?"
"My mother tore it up, all right. Are you going to read it or not?" Confusion still clouded Kate's brain. She looked down at the letter and silently read the words. She had to go through the note twice before comprehension began to dawn.
"I am the Atlanta shooter. I killed those guys because I was a dirty fag with them, and I didn't want anybody to find out. Don't try to find me or I will kill more people. Maggie, I'm sorry that I never apologized to you. I should have told you that what happened wasn't your fault."
Kate was so stunned that she could barely think of a response.
"Jimmy didn't write this."
"He did. It was his handwriting, his signature."
"It's not true."
"I know what you're going to say. I went through the same thing last night." Maggie indicated the bar. "He's gay, Kate. Why would he tell the truth about being gay and lie about being a murderer?"
Kate's mouth opened, but she couldn't think what to say.
"You ask my Uncle Terry, the first one is worse than the second. Jimmy might as well have written a suicide note."
"Tell me why he said any of it, if it's not true."
"Because," Kate was still stymied.
"Because."
"Eduardo's description? That's Jimmy. Think about the shooter. He knows the police codes. He knows police routines and procedures. Don wouldn't be expecting Jimmy to pull a gun. Nobody would. And look at where we are. This is a gay bar where they had a memorial service for Don. You don't have a service for somebody you don't know. Don was gay. They were both gay. And Jimmy snapped and...
Maggie, stop this.
You're exhausted. You haven't slept all night. You're jumping to so many conclusions that you've forgotten the facts."
"I know the facts."
"Then let's go over them."
Kate laid it out for her. "Delilah said that the shooter was wearing jeans and a red shirt. Are you telling me Jimmy changed his clothes to kill Don, then changed back into his uniform before carrying him all the way to the hospital?"
Maggie started shaking her head.
"I don't know. I don't know what to think anymore."
"Does Jimmy own a red shirt? You said he only wears black, gray, and navy."
"The whore could have been lying, or Eduardo was.
She told the same lie Jimmy did then. He said the shooter was wearing a red shirt and jeans."
Maggie still could not accept it. "Jimmy lied about the shooter. He said he was black."
"The shooter was wearing black gloves. That's why Jimmy said he was black. He probably saw the gun and the hand holding it, and then he dove for cover. After what you and I both went through yesterday, I think it's understandable that some of the details were lost."
Maggie kept shaking her head. There were tears in her eyes.
"You just have to accept it. We both have to accept it."
"I won't accept anything of the sort."
Kate finally realized that there was nothing to do but to tell Maggie the truth. Or at least part of it. "The night that Don was killed, Jimmy got hurt too."
Maggie looked dubious.
"I told you he has a bad knee."
"That's not what I'm talking about.
Some shrapnel from the bullet that killed Don was in Jimmy's thigh."
Kate chose her words carefully. Maggie didn't need the details.
"I talked to the doctor at Grady who treated him. Jimmy didn't say anything about shrapnel.
Kate flailed for an explanation.
You know how Jimmy is. He's not going to admit he's hurt. He's too tough for that.
Maggie looked desperate to be persuaded.
What are you saying?
Jimmy couldn't get shrapnel in his leg if he was holding the gun. Ergo, he was standing beside Dawn when it happened.
Maggie put her hand to her neck.
He had blood all over his face and chest. I remember thinking he had to be close when Dawn was shot.
That's right, Kate agreed. He was standing beside Dawn when it happened.
Maggie sat up. I saw fresh blood on Jimmy's pants. You were there, I was in the street with Conroy. You guys pulled up, I saw the blood and I asked him about it and he got really weird.
She grabbed Kate's arm. Oh, Kate. Are you sure? That's really what the doctor said?
You can talk to him yourself. Kate felt certain Philip would have no trouble spinning a white lie.
We'll go there now.
Maggie wasn't listening. She was still picking everything apart.
I don't understand. Why would he say he killed those people?
Stress? Kate was on shaky ground. This was more her father's area of expertise.
Maybe at some level he felt responsible because he couldn't save Dawn?
Maggie saw another hole in the confession.
So all those guys were gay? Keene, Porter, Johnson, Ballard?
You heard the bartender, Kate said. The force is full of them.
But those guys had wives. They had mistresses.
Kate could not begin to explain. She was only worried about Jimmy now. Why had he written those words? What could his motive possibly be? She read the letter again. Dirty fag. The phrase was something another person would call you, not something you would call yourself. Maggie said what they were both thinking.
None of this makes sense.
There's always a reason. We just need to figure it out.
I've spent all night trying to. There's no reason.
Maggie picked up a piece of gravel from the ground. She tossed it into the weeds. Kate read Jimmy's words aloud.
I should have told you that what happened wasn't your fault.
Maggie threw another rock. This one went farther. She was trying to hit the shopping cart. Kate silently read the lines again.
I'm sorry that I never apologized to you. I should have told you that what happened wasn't your fault.
She asked, what wasn't your fault? Maggie hurled another rock. This one landed closer to the cart. Instead of answering, she searched for another weapon. Kate looked down at the letter. She had it memorized by now. She stared instead at the cursive words. Maggie's handwriting was better than her own. The pen had bored down into the paper. She could feel the indentations through the back of the page. Maggie said, 8 years ago, Jimmy had this friend named Michael. Kate kept her eyes down.
He was good-looking. Jimmy's friends are always good-looking.
Maggie's sharp, surprised laugh indicated that she finally understood why. Michael slept over all the time. I was 15. I had a crush on him. He wouldn't give me the time of day. She gripped a rock in her hand.
One night I was asleep, and I woke up and Michael was on top of me.
She shrugged.
I was stupid about that kind of stuff. I didn't really know what was going on. But it hurt like hell and he wouldn't stop. And Jimmy must have heard me scream because the next thing I know, he's in my room and he's beating the shit out of Michael.
She glanced over at Kate.
My mother was there, and my Uncle Terry.
Which was the first time I realized he spent the night sometimes.
My sister was 5. She slept through it, but she knows about it now. Terry made sure of that.
She threw the rock. It clanged against the metal cart.
He hangs it over my head all the time. All of them do. It's what they use against me when I forget my place.
Kate smoothed together her lips. She didn't know what to say.
At least now Maggie's rage over Lewis Conroy raping a teenager made some kind of sense. Maggie said, "You know, the whole time Jimmy was beating Michael, he kept screaming, 'How could you do this to me?' Like he was the one who was hurt. And he was hurt. I'd never seen him upset like that before. He was bawling, tears pouring down his face, snot dripping out of his nose. He wouldn't talk to me for months afterward. And when he finally did, it was never the same."
She kicked at the gravel on the ground. "I always thought that it was my fault. Because of what came afterward. Because I had shamed the family. But now I think Jimmy was upset because Michael had cheated on him." She laughed again. "He was jealous of me. Or about what happened between me and Michael."
Kate heard Maggie's words echo in her ears. "What came afterward?" What had come afterward? The nurse next door? Maggie took back her notebook and stared at Jimmy's confession. "The weird thing is, Jimmy apologized to me yesterday when we were in the hospital. He told me he was sorry for what happened. First time he's ever apologized for anything. And I know that he was talking about that night with Michael because he said 7 years ago, and I told him it was 8 and he agreed." She shrugged at Kate. "So why would he say he never apologized?"
"He didn't apologize for what really happened.
He was doped up on pain pills. Maybe he forgot he apologized."
She closed the notebook. "That still doesn't explain why he wrote these things, or where he is now."
"He could be with somebody you don't know."
Maggie echoed Kate's earlier words. "A secret person."
"He's probably with a friend, Maggie. Somebody who knows about Dawn and can comfort him."
Kate tried. "Look at the letter from his point of view. Revealing that he's gay means you won't show it to anybody else. And the part about hurting more people if you come looking for him? He never hurt any of them in the first place. He was trying to push you away."
"Terry's looking for him."
Maggie's voice went down in distress.
"He's going to shoot him on sight. He told me himself."
"If you can't find Jimmy, then Terry can't."
Maggie's desperation was back. "I don't know what to do. We need to keep doing what we've been doing. Work the case. This is a big break. Dawn and Jimmy were targeted by the shooter for a reason. If that reason is because the shooter hates gay men, then we have a connection."
"What if Jimmy knows who the shooter is? What if it's somebody he was with and he knows the guy is killing people, but he can't turn him in?"
That sounded as good an explanation as any, but it still got them nowhere.
"We can sit around talking conspiracy theories, or we can actually start looking into things."
Maggie said, "Maybe Jimmy is tracking him on his own. That's what he was doing yesterday when that woman shot him. Maybe Jimmy has a lead and writing the letter was his way of making sure we didn't get in the way."
Again, Kate could not argue with the theory. "I don't see how we can get in the way if we keep working the case the same way we've been working it."
"You mean the files?" Maggie said. "Terry has them."
"He doesn't have our brains. And you have yet to notice what an excellent memory I have."
Kate had no problem recalling all the questions she had yesterday after reading the shooter files.
"Autopsies are public records. Would a doctor censor the documents if he found evidence that led him to believe that the victims were gay?"
"I have no idea."
"What about your friend at the coroner's office?"
"All she does is type the reports. They don't tell her anything."
Maggie rubbed her eyes.
"Mark Porter was happily married. Greg Keane was separated from his wife. I didn't know Ballard and Johnson,
They were married, according to their files. 2 kids each. Gail might know more. She's in everybody's business.
Then let's go to the hospital.
Kate pushed herself up. She offered her hand to Maggie.
You get the gossip from Gail. I know a doctor who might be able to answer our other question about the autopsy.
Maggie stood on her own. What if we're wrong and Jimmy's missing for another reason? Kate repeated her earlier advice.
We just keep moving forward until we figure it out.
Chapter 29. Fox flicked up his coat collar as he walked through the train yard. He hadn't shaved today. He smelled of booze. He was dressed in his usual camouflage.
Nothing to see here, buddy. Just another bum looking for a dry place to hole up.
He had expected to open his front door this morning and find the newspaper screaming up a headline about a cop who had confessed to the most heinous of crimes. Instead, he saw a story about the mayor's new integration plan. Fox's eyesight was good. He stood over the paper, read the first few lines, then quietly shut the door. An unexpected development. Fox's plan had depended upon the confession being made public. There had to be a day of reckoning. Jimmy Lawson had to be hunted. He had to be captured by a hero cop, and then he had to be handled by a hero force. One, maybe 2 men would be selected for the task. Trusted men. Men with steady hands and iron constitutions. Jimmy could not be allowed to tell his story. The force could not handle the shame. This fallen officer had been one of their own. Would they let the world know that they had harbored a murderer, a deviant in the Brotherhood? No, sir. The good men who controlled this city would not let that happen. Fox knew for a fact that shame was a great motivator. It was why Jimmy had broken so quickly. All Fox had to do was press the gun to Jimmy's head. And the next thing he knew, Jimmy was sitting at the Lawson dining room table with a pen in his hand. And then the problem started. Jimmy's tears had wet the paper. Fox made him start over. Jimmy's pen had torn the page. Fox made him start over. Jimmy had fucked up so many times that Fox had finally dictated every single word to him. And then Jimmy had asked for permission to write more. Who would have guessed the guy gave a shit about his sister? Fox had been an only child, as were his parents. There were no cousins to play with. The only uncle he ever knew was his Uncle Sam. Fox had never given any thought to what it might be like to have a sibling. Just one more head for Senior to cuff. One more ass for him to beat. One more hand to crush with the heel of his shoe. Another pair of legs to break. Because, of course, it wasn't just Fox's mother. Why just beat on a woman when you could wail on a growing boy? Fox didn't ask Jimmy what he was apologizing to his sister for. They had time, but not that much time. If Jimmy was sending some kind of code, Fox was worried not one bit. No one would listen to Maggie Lawson. Fox had considered her for a target years ago and decided that she just wasn't worth it. A woman like that would burn herself out on her own. Maggie had brought so much shame onto the family that her own mother couldn't hold up her head when she walked down the street. What Fox didn't count on was Terry Lawson's shame. Jimmy was his blood. Fox should have known an old soldier like Terry would want to put his nephew down himself. An unexpected development, but one Fox could put to his own good use. That was what a man did. Other men looked at problems. Fox looked at solutions. Still, Fox was nervous. Could Kate do her part? Could Fox coax her into his lair? He felt a breath on the back of his neck. He heard the invisible footsteps sneaking up behind him. He saw the flicker of the leaves that could be the wind or could be a man with a knife who would silently slit Fox's throat, then hide in the jungle, waiting for the next white face that came along. Fox had seen it happen. They called him Mick. He had a movie star's features, but he was willing to get his hands dirty. Adaptable. Smart. He learned the ropes. He paid his dues. And then he went to the wrong direction, ignored the right signs, and ended up with his neck cut back to his spine. Fox had not tracked the killer. He was too much in awe of his work. Mick was 10, maybe 15 feet away from Fox when his time came. Fox was transfixed by the killer's dance. The elegant tiptoe through the jungle. The graceful swing of the machete. The lissome turn of his head to keep the spray of arterial blood from clouding his vision. An artist. That was how Fox was going to be today. He had planned the dance in his head. There was just the matter of leading Kate to the center of the floor. Walking across the train yard, Fox heard the music start up in his head. Chapter 30. Kate tried to ignore the knowing look she got from the nurse when she asked how to find Dr. Van Zandt's office. If she hadn't felt like a whore already, she certainly did now. She checked her watch as she walked down the hallway. Kate had allotted herself 10 minutes to ask Philip her questions. Gail was in the bowels of the hospital, having some sort of test performed. The nurse had said she would be at least half an hour. Kate didn't need to be in a room with Philip for that long. 10 minutes was more than enough time for him to give her a straight answer. These were probably fool's errands anyway. Gail Patterson wasn't sitting on information that could break this case wide open. She was too smart a cop not to have already put it together if she did. And Kate wasn't certain that Maggie was up to the job. While she could see how Maggie had gotten to the point, Kate was slightly appalled that the woman could think even for a moment that her brother was capable of mass murder. As to the questions they had for Philip, so what if all the dead men were homosexuals? What could Kate and Maggie do with that information? There was nowhere for them to go, no one to talk to. They couldn't start questioning members of the gay community because they had no idea who they were. Kate occasionally read an alternative newspaper. Their offices might be a starting point. Or they could go back to the bartenders at Dabbler's. Or they could just run around in circles until they bumped heads and fell down. Philip's office door was closed. Kate heard the deep vibrato of his voice. He was obviously on the phone. He was probably talking to another woman, possibly his wife. Kate almost didn't knock, but a couple of snickering nurses walked by, and she knocked so loudly that the door shook.
"Yes?" he called.
Kate opened the door. Philip was sitting behind a metal desk. He held a telephone to his ear. 2 leather sled chairs were across from him. A sleek leather couch took up the entire left side of the room. He was wearing a dark blue suit that brought out the color in his eyes, and an open-necked yellow shirt that showed the curling hair on his chest. Kate wanted to turn around and walk back out the door.
"Darling."
He hung up the phone and rose from his chair.
"What a pleasure to see you."
"I'm here on business." She shut the door. "I need to talk to you about sperm."
"I'd be happy to make you some more."
Kate silently cursed her verbal idiocy. "This is serious."
"Of course it is. I can see that now."
He indicated the couch. Kate sat on the edge of one of the deep chairs. He said,
"May I ask if you're well? You left in such a hurry this morning."
"Yes, Dr. Van Ziplis. Thank you for your concern." He laughed, seemingly more delighted with the name than Oma. He sat behind his desk.
"Now let's be serious. What is your question, Officer Murphy?"
"Would a doctor lie on an autopsy report?"
His interest was piqued.
"I suppose it would depend on what was found,"
If a man was homosexual, would there be physical signs?
The short answer is yes. He leaned back in his chair. As for your original question, you would likely find traces in the areas you would expect to find traces. If it was ingested with 1 to 2 hours of death, it might be found in the stomach. Sperm is high in fat and protein, which takes time for the digestive system to process, though the caloric value is roughly the same as a can of tab, which I would like for you to keep in mind.
Kate caught herself before she stupidly asked him why. Let's say that the coroner found traces where you mentioned, or found evidence in the stomach. Would these findings be noted on the autopsy report, or is that something that would be left off?
I would leave them off if they didn't serve a purpose, but then I am a man of great discretion. Shall I call the coroner for you and find out?
You know the coroner?
One of them, Artie Benowitz.
He noted Kate's surprise.
Yeah, that putz. Bottom of his class at UGA. Let me give him a call.
He picked up the phone.
Candy, can you get me Dr. Benowitz, please?
He winked at Kate. She looked at her watch. How had this only taken 4 minutes? Kate glanced around the office. The couch was longer than Philip was tall. The chairs were so deep that her hamstrings were starting to ache from the effort of keeping herself perched on the edge. Philip cupped his hand to the phone.
Do you have names for me?
Kate took out her notebook. She flipped to the names of the dead officers. They were double homicides, so they go together, two and two.
I can't hear you. Could you please come sit in my lap?
Kate slapped the notebook down in front of him. Philip silently read the list.
These are the police officers who were executed.
Yes. He held up a finger and spoke into the phone.
Hello, Artie? Yes, Van Ziplis here.
He winked at Kate again. She wanted to smack him.
I've got some names for you. I need to know if they were Fagalas.
He read the names from the list. At the same time, he reached his hand into his jacket pocket. Kate saw a flash of black silk in his hand. She lunged across the desk. He snatched back her underwear. He said,
"Yes, I'll hold."
Philip? Kate struggled to control her voice. He moved the receiver away from his mouth.
I found these in my car this morning. Do you know to whom they belong?
Give them to me.
You don't want them. I wore them on my head as I drove to work.
Kate held out her hand. Now.
But they're so silky.
He tucked her underwear down the front of his pants.
I love the way they feel against my...
Yes. He moved the phone back to his mouth.
I'm here, Artie. That's great. No sign whatsoever. What's that?
He moved the phone away again, telling Kate.
Artie took the liberty. Don Wesley is an affirmative. The other four are a no. Anything else?
Kate grabbed a pen and added Lionel Rosa's name to the list. This man was killed yesterday. His mother is trying to get him released. She's already sitting shiva. Philip sat up in his chair. His voice lost its teasing tone, and he relayed the information to Artie Benowitz. There was no more small talk at the end. He simply hung up the phone. Mr. Rosa will be released this afternoon.
Thank you.
Kate felt relieved. At least that was one good thing she was able to do today. Now will you give me back my underwear?
Darling, I would like very much for you to come get it.
Kate gripped her hands in her lap.
Please try to be serious. I've just seen you do it, so I know it's possible.
But I keep thinking of your hand in my pants. I can't concentrate.
She gave up.
Where is this going?
Why does it have to go anywhere?
Kate had had her fill of him always answering her questions with more questions.
Listen to me, Caitlin.
Philip came around his desk and sat in the chair beside her.
Will you let me hold your hands? This really requires me to hold your hands.
She reluctantly let him hold her hands. He gazed into her eyes.
I've wanted you from the moment I saw you in Janice Sadler's basement. You were the most beautiful girl I had seen in my life. I carried the memory of your kisses to Jerusalem. I begged my parents to let me return. I wrote our names in the back of my notebooks. Mr. Caitlin Herschel. I kissed my hand and pretended it was you.
Kate laughed, because this was ridiculous even for Philip.
Then why didn't you look me up when you came back to America? I was still single then.
He held her hands more gently.
Because I have a duty to marry a Jewish woman who will raise my children in our faith, so that they will raise their children in their faith and so on until our people are made whole again.
Kate slid away from his grasp.
And what am I in this equation? You are my shiksa without the guilt.
I'm as Jewish as you are.
Yeah, but you smell better.
He nuzzled her neck. Kate pushed him away. I'm working. I have to be back downstairs and... She looked at her watch and wondered if the hands had somehow moved backward. Gail was still in the middle of her test. Kate had lied like a cat in a sunbeam all week, but suddenly, the skill abandoned her.
I only have 15 minutes. So, kiss me for 14 minutes. That leaves you plenty of time to get downstairs.
Why do I get the feeling you've done that math before? Philip shot his cuffs. He showed Kate his digital watch. He pressed a few buttons, and a timer came up showing 14 minutes.
Philip.
He started the timer. She said, I should go.
But you're not.
Kate pressed her hands against the seat of the chair. She did not stand.
Do you know how perfect your mouth is?
He looked down at her lips.
I think about the color all the time. Is it like roses? Tulips? It drives me mad just wondering.
She smiled, but not because he was charming. He talked to her like a pimp, except he wasn't tricking her out. He was turning her feral.
Here.
Philip took her hand and pressed it to his chest.
Do you feel my pounding heart? Do you understand the effect you have on me?
His heart was beating fast. She could feel it through his shirt. Kate moved her hand to his open collar. The skin was hot. She let her fingers travel up to his face. His cheek was rough with stubble.
His lips were so soft.
Kate kissed him because she wanted to. She wrapped her hand around the back of his neck. She pulled him close.
All because she wanted to.
Philip hardly needed encouragement. He took off her belts with a practiced authority. Kate didn't let herself wonder why he knew how. She concentrated on his mouth, his hands. He went down on his knees in front of her. Kate's shirt came off. He unhooked her bra. She leaned back in the chair. She pressed her foot against his desk. Her head dropped back as he pulled down her underwear. And then he slowed everything down. His tongue made soft, lazy circles around her breast, down her stomach. He inched languorously downward until he was gently stroking between her legs. Kate ran her fingers through his thick hair. He was watching her, noting her breathing, her responses, so he could build her pleasure at his own leisurely pace.
Philip. She thought about his goddamn watch. Come on, please.
He allowed her to pull him back up. Kate bit his lip. She sucked his tongue. She tried to coax him with her hand, but he wouldn't let her. He would not be rushed. He kept the same languid pace until his mouth had set her body on fire. When he finally eased into her, it was with such exquisite slowness that Kate's teeth wanted to chatter. He pulled out by degrees, her body
clenched for him. She felt hollow. And then he pushed back inside, and she moaned with pleasure. Caitlin. His breath was hot in her ear. He kept the same maddening rhythm. Do you like the way I'm fucking you? Kate dug her fingernails into his skin. Do you want me to go slower? No. He was killing her. Please. Are you sure? Philip. She couldn't stand it anymore. Just shut up and fuck me.